Coffee and Catastrophe, Writers on a Caffeine High. Episode 10, Nuts and Bolts, Three-Dimensional Characters.
Woohoo! You know what? This is, to me, the most important thing to get right with your writing. You know, your story may not be real cohesive and stuff like that, but if your characters are... If your characters feel like real people, three-dimensional characters, if they feel like they're live, flesh-and-blood human beings, or that they could be, you know, people that just leap off the page, I think that overcomes a lot of issues maybe with your plot of your story or you know, your world-building or whatever. If your characters are sympathetic and feel very real and have pasts, presents, and yearnings for futures, I think that is a very positive thing.
See, I believe you should never have two-dimensional characters. But I also...
No, I said three-dimensional!
I know, I should never have a two-dimensional character.
Oh, okay.
A flat, unresponsive character. Mm-hmm. But I think we should rip open the rift and go into the fourth-dimensional new characters. Howdy, everybody. I am William Brian Johnson, author of Hell to Pay.
Arthur?
It's getting late.
Okay. And we've not had enough coffee, I don't
think,
tonight.
That's okay. Every time I say I write horror, people always go, "What did you say?"
Okay, and before we get off on another tangent, I am D.A. Bale, author of the Deepest Darkness series and the Bartender Babe Chronicles. You can pick them up at an ebook store anywhere near you.
Aren't you also doing paper?
Oh, yes, I am.
Okay,
but you can also pick them up at on a Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Smashwords, anywhere you want.
I think I'm just doing Amazon right now. I don't think I'm...
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
I'll have to look at that.
Yeah, you can connect your print copies to Smashwords, yeah. And you'll have to look up on Barnes & Noble, because they automatically pick it up if you've got wide distribution through CreateSpace.
Interesting.
And that's a whole nother ball of wax we'll get into in a future podcast.
And if you want to contact me, you can find my webpage at fatherthunder.blogspot.com.
Yay, once again, he did it right. And you can find me at dabalepublishing.blogspot.com.
Questions, comments, concerns, hate mail, send it to catastrophiccoffee@gmail.com.
Oh, don't send hate mail, I might cry.
Yeah. Yeah. All right.
Give us a little something there.
When writing a novel, a writer should create living people, not just characters. A character is a caricature, by Ernest Hemingway.
And I very much believe that.
You don't really understand an antagonist until you understand why he's the protagonist in his own version of the world. I absolutely love this and fully agree with this.
I love it too! You know, that's what makes some of the antagonists so interesting, is how twisted they are. If you are able to really get into, you know, under the skin of your bad guys...
Yes.
Oh, you can have so much
fun with...
Not
only under the skin, but sometimes through the eyes, because you need to know where your bad guys are coming.
Uh-huh.
Because evil cannot be evil for the sake of evil.
No.
Unless you're dealing with some crazy ancient supernatural force, but even sometimes they need a backstory.
It's got to have a germ, a seed, somewhere that was planted that grew into this dark, twisted person.
And the actions that they're doing may seem horrific, but there's a reason.
Yeah.
And there's a reason that makes a lot of sense once you understand that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that discovery needs to be in a book. Okay, I think we're done.
No. One of the reasons why I really wanted to deal with three-dimensional characters in our Nuts and Bolts series here.
Four-dimensional.
Okay, we're not going to break the fourth wall here. Oh, heck, we've already broken the fourth wall.
Yeah, many times.
Yes, of course. But one of the reasons why I really wanted to make this a key element of our Nuts and Bolts series is because of the fact that this, again, to me, is number one. If I can get inside a character's head, if I can connect in some way with a character in a book, I will enjoy reading that story a lot more. Problem that I have seen as a reviewer and as a reader of tens of thousands of books over my lifetime, the problem that I have run into is that in so many stories, the characters are very flat.
Yep.
The characters are like those old-fashioned, I'm going to age myself here, but we used to have these little cardboard characters, and then you could cut out these little, like, outfits and stuff like that. And yes, I'm being girly here. Women, middle-aged women will understand what I'm talking about. But you had all these different little clothes that you could cut out and then fold onto your little cardboard cutout character, you know, and change her clothes and stuff like that. It was kind of like Barbies for...
Can I ask a strange question?
Okay.
What was it like to grow up in the Great Depression?
Oh, would you stop that? Anyway, but it was kind of a little girl's thing, you know, kind of like fashion plates type of thing.
Did you really wear dresses made out of flower sacks?
What?
Sorry, we've been studying.
Oh, flower sacks! Yeah. Oh my gosh, I thought you said something else! I was like, I can't believe you said that!
Well, here we go. It's time for another quote. Most people carry their demons around with them buried deep down inside. Writers wrestle their demons to the surface, fling them on a page, and then call them characters. That's by C.K. Webb.
Fling them on a page makes me want to think of fling your feces.
Somebody's been watching the monkeys too closely.
No. That's from Big Bang Theory. Shout out, hey! But yeah, it's one of those things that really frustrates me, because you may have a decent story, but the characters are just completely unrelatable. You know, they only think in terms of what's going on in the present. You know, your characters all seem to come across as the same. You know, your primary characters, you know, they have no thoughts of problems that they've got going on. No hints of things from their past that have influenced how they see the world, what they think about what they're doing, what they wish they were doing, and why they wish they were doing something different or something. I mean, it's just there's no sense of internal motivation of those characters, of why they do what they do. They basically just come across as Geppetto pulling Pinocchio's strings. You know, it's basically the author wants this to happen to this character, so the character does this, the character does that, the character goes here, the character goes there. You never get a sense of why the character's doing what they're doing or why they think the way they do, and then all the characters in the entire story, there's nothing that separates one character from another, that distinguishes one character from another. They're all just cardboard cutouts and you know, Pinocchios, and it's extremely frustrating.
To where, you know, when I teach literature, one thing I like to talk about is the idea of archetypes.
Mm.
And you have the trickster, you have the hero, you have the dragon, which is the antagonist in the physical form, and then you have the shadow, which is essentially kind of the Moriarty the Sherlock mm-hmm. Holmes series in the mm-hmm. background, making everybody do these things.
Mm-hmm.
But I also warn to beware of stereotypes.
Right.
Don't make a white hat or a hero the good, strong guy that's all muscle and not a lot of brain, Superman.
Well, they need flaws.
And don't make your bad guy kind of a weaker, really smart guy, Lex Luthor.
Yeah.
And then suddenly you have this battle of strength versus brain.
Well, you know, you're bringing up the whole Superman thing, too. You know, you need characters that have flaws, internal conflicts, right, and things like that. Because, you know, even Superman, as great and wonderful and as perfect as he seems, he still has to face the kryptonite on occasion.
And he's kind of a jerk when you really get to know him.
Oh, that was only the way, you know, what was his name played him?
Harvey Keitel?
No! Oh my gosh! He never played Superman! Harvey Keitel?
Oh, I'm thinking the wrong guy.
I was gonna say! Gee! Wrong. Christopher Reeve, thank you. There we go.
Pulling the way back.
You know, well, you know, hey, I'm old, you know, unlike some people I know.
Yeah.
Though you are beginning to show your age a little bit here, and the bags you under probably, your eyes, I'm kidding.
You probably used to watch George Reeves.
Who?
Never mind.
Is that kind of an Adam West thing with Batman?
Is
that the same
actually,
time frame?
No, about 10 years before 1950s.
Oh, well, no, yeah, you're totally getting before my time.
He was the original
time guy
that played it. Unfortunately, he was not faster than speed. That's a history thing.
Did he have a beer belly?
What always got me is, you know, the villain would jump out and shoot him three or four times with the gun, And he'd just kind of stand there like, I'm Superman. And then the villain would end up throwing the gun at him, and he'd always duck out of the way like, I gotta move, because that's gonna hurt.
Instead of just letting it hit him and go,
yeah,
bounce right off of me, I'm Teflon.
Doesn't hurt me at all. We are getting way off topic.
Of course.
Harvey Cavill, I'm sorry. C-A-V-I-L-L.
Okay.
He's the one that plays Superman in the last handful of movies.
Okay, yeah. I know nothing. You mean recent movies?
Batman versus Superman and Superman Returns.
Oh, Henry Cavill.
Okay, sure.
Whatever. Cavill. Okay.
I don't care.
Okay.
I like Ben Affleck as Batman, but don't leave so much. I'm sorry. Martha! No. Bad.
Yeah, I liked him in Tristan and Isolde.
Wagner was dead. That's one of Wagner's operas.
Well, it was actually, if it was one of Wagner's operas, it was based upon an old mythological poem, kind of like a Beowulf type of thing.
Okay, well, saga, huh?
Yeah. Of course, it changes and has variations and stuff like that. It's great story, great medieval story.
Really off topic.
Yes, we are, but, you know, we're talking characters!
I'm going to bring this back real quick. The novels we read allow us to encounter possible persons, versions of ourselves that we would never see, never permit ourselves to see, never permit ourselves to become, in places that we can never go and might not care to, while assuring that we can return home again. And that was written by Thomas C. Foster.
You know, I kind of relate to that a little bit, because there are some things in my Bartender Babe Chronicles series that I enjoy writing, because I would never say something, or I would never do something like what she does, but it just cracks me up having her do it, and I'm just like, yeah, I'd never be brave enough to say or do this.
If my friends ever really sit down and read Hell to Pay,
they'd see themselves?
Yes. Because I took traits of all of my friends and kind of, I toned down certain ones and then really made grand other ones. And it's a lot of my friends to a T.
Oh, you bad boy!
Yeah. And I've told them that before.
Well, you know, In so many cases, how many friends and family ever do really support our writing? You know, very few, actually.
Yeah.
And if you are an author out there, a new author, getting ready to publish something, and you expect to make a bunch of money off of your friends and family buying your book, ain't gonna happen. Sorry to tell you, but, you know, they know you.
Yeah.
They don't think of you that way.
Well, and they may support you just out of personal.
Well, you know, it's interesting, too. I mean, getting, again, off topic here, I've got a cousin and his wife and daughters. They have been probably, outside of my mother, some of my staunchest supporters.
Mm.
You know, without any, you know, push or anything, you know, from me, they've come across my books and they have just devoured them. And they have been extremely supportive. And sometimes just getting that pat on the back from them helps me get through another day of writing. So, and coming up with some really interesting characters. So what are some things that we need to take into account when really sitting down to work with our characters, with creating our characters? How do we take our characters from being these one-dimensional, two-dimensional, cardboard cutout, you know, puppets on a string, to feeling as if they're real-life people?
You know, I hate to say make characters out of people you know, but I mean, one thing I used to love to do is go out and people watch. You know, there was this wonderful bar called Subculture. It was a kind of a weird goth club.
Okay.
That was in town, and this was probably back in the 90s. And it was a very dark place, red lights, big streaming dance floor.
Oh, the red light district?
Not quite the red light district.
Okay.
No, that was actually to the south of it.
But anyway, okay.
The interesting thing was, it was also the entrance to the bar that was next door that was a little bit more trendier, a little bit more uppity, more...
You mentioned this before.
Yeah, and so a lot of times, just people watching and watching the people come in and feel very uncomfortable about being there, because they used to play really loud heavy metal or more scary, it was more of a kind of a scary bar. And it was a fun club. It was a really fun place to go and just hang out and watch people and watch people interact. Especially when the lines for the other bar would go clear out the door and they'd spill into our area, and we'd just kind of sit there and watch them and watch their skin crawl. But With that also, I think it's the fact of going out, people watching, and realizing, look at somebody. Go out. This is your thing that
don't
you need
stalk
to do.
Them, though, people. Please. We're not saying go stalk somebody. No. Bad. We'll sick the police on you.
This is what I want you to do. Go out, look at somebody. Just at random. Assign a story to them.
Yeah.
Tell their backstory.
Uh-huh.
Guess what? You just made a character.
Yeah. And that's the key thing, I think, that's missing in a lot of characters in a lot of stories.
They're
is the fact they've never fleshed out their backstory. They've never, you know, tried to figure out what makes this individual tick.
Yeah.
One of the things that I've gotten into some discussions on K-boards and some other places is, you know, people are just like, oh, you know, should you worry about hair color? Should you worry about eye color? Should you worry about describing your character with the old tropes of they stand in front of a mirror or whatever and stuff like that? And you know what? Honestly, as a reader, I don't care for an author to describe someone to me. I can get a sense of, in my own mind, what this person looks like. I think worrying so much about the physical outside appearance.
Unless there's something about the character.
And that's what I was going to say next. In Running Into the Darkness, there is something about the main character, Samantha. She has a scar along her chin. And when she's thinking or whatever, she'll just kind of rub that scar and everything. Well, but there's a reason for it, and that plays into her backstory. And then you get to find out what her backstory is and how she got that scar.
That
Yep. Okay. That was the whole,
yeah.
That thing. You have to buy the book to read it. Actually, it's free in ebook form, but, you know, if you want more information, you know, find out by downloading the book. Free of charge as an ebook. $13.99, I think, as a print book. But if you're going to get, you know, if you're going to focus any time on an exterior appearance of a character, or even any internalizations that a character might have with their internal motivations and stuff like that, the only reason that you focus on it, in my opinion, is because it has something to do with the story. It has something to do with what makes that character tick.
One of the things I remember about Bailey and Hilda Pay was Bailey was a very comfortable man in his own skin.
Right.
He didn't want anybody else around. Mm-hmm. But he had a car that he had driven essentially to the point of falling apart.
I remember.
He still had an 8-track player in it.
Mm-hmm.
He still had 8 tracks.
Mm-hmm.
He had a chair at home that when he sank into, his ass essentially fit perfectly into the chair. Anybody else would sit in that chair and go, oh, this is terrible.
That's Sheldon's spot.
Yeah. But he essentially jumped into that chair, and guess what? He fit it perfectly.
Oh, wow.
And I think he even used to use an old flip phone.
A flip phone. Yes.
Yeah. And he had used it to the point where it fell apart in a very pivotal scene where he needed to contact somebody. But it's the fact that you have somebody that isn't worried about the next iPhone, who isn't worried about all the trappings and, you know, Bailey himself was a miserable character. He was almost an
anti-hero. He was a tortured character.
Yeah.
He wasn't miserable, he was tortured.
He was almost an anti-hero.
Well, and it was that aspect that made him an interesting character, because you gave him such a deep and a dark backstory of how he had become the way he was. And that's one of the things, again, that I think, you know, instead of worrying so much about the appearances and things like that,
worry more about the psyche. Dig
deeper. Find out what's going on inside their brain, because that's, again, one way that you distinguish one character from the next. You create a nice backstory for each of your main characters in your story. That is going to help you differentiate that character one from another, so that all your characters don't feel like just the same person, just with a different name, which is what I run into all the time in
books. And not only that, but the dialogue also becomes personalized.
Yes, you know, maybe a certain syntax, or a way they say something, or the rhythm of their speech.
Yeah, you don't need to be going on and adding too much of that dialect or anything, because you want those characters to be understandable. I love Gumbo.
You're terrible. But, yeah, I mean, I think if you really delve into the past of your character, if you delve into more than just, you know, their hair color, eye color, you know, their schooling, unless that's important to the story, you know, try to figure out what some of their quirks are. What's their favorite food and why? You know, don't just ask what, ask the why. There was a book that I read, and the character, you didn't know the backstory at that point, but the character, she would walk out of the downtown building where she worked to her apartment, and she always had her head down, which caused her a problem later on in the story, but she always had her head down, and inside her head, she was no longer doing it out loud, but inside her head, she's counting her steps, and counting her steps from, you think that, but that OCD developed because of a very traumatic situation that happened to her as a child, but you don't find that out until later on in the story, but it's a quirk about her. There's another story that I read where you had a character who she loved lipsticks, and she collected lipsticks. She hoarded lipsticks. She had, you know, her boyfriend thought she had all this pink lipstick. Oh, but no, each tone and variance was very important. This one went with this, and this one went with that, and this one when I'm feeling this way, and this one when I'm... And it was so interesting because you took just some random stupid little thing like a tube of lipstick, and she had like 200 lipsticks, and they all looked almost exactly the same color, but she knew exactly what each color was. She knew exactly the name of each color, and she knew exactly why she had each color of lipstick. And it was just one of those little quirks to her character.
Oh, the crazy cat lady lived across the street from Bailey. That was one of my favorite.
I forgot about her!
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I never dwelled too much other than the fact that...
I introduced her,
talked a little bit about her, you know, put that odd information that not only did she have like 32 cats in the household, she also had 6 in the freezer. Because she just couldn't bear to let them go.
So she threw them in cryo.
Yeah, she threw them in cryo sleep. They'll make it back someday. And yeah, every single cat, whenever that door would open, those little felines would just flee. They would get the hell out of there. Like, there was no stopping them.
Well, you know, one of the things that I think really comes into play here is just that voice of the character.
Yeah.
You know, we were talking about earlier syntax and their flow of speech and stuff like that, but the voice of your character is a lot more than just the way they speak. It's not even really the way they speak. It's a certain sense of who that character is. And right. If you, as a writer, do not have a good sense of who your character is, you're not going to be able to find that character's voice. And I don't know how else to really explain it.
I'm trying to think, what's the character's name? Fred. In Hell to Pay the Zombie. That wasn't a zombie. It was a... I forget what the Norse term is for it, but essentially it's a restless dead character.
Yeah, he's like a reanimated...
Yeah.
But he wasn't a zombie, yeah.
He wasn't a zombie, but it pissed him off if you called him a zombie.
And was he the one that had the eyeball thing?
No.
Which one was that one?
That was the bodybuilder thug guy. I can't remember what his name was. St. James or something.
Okay, yeah.
But he was going to go beat up on the antagonist because he thought the antagonist had made an unnecessary advance on his girl.
Yeah.
And ended up that the antagonist was possessed at the time and ended up making this roided out thug guy into his personal servant.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Odd dangly stuff going on.
Gross.
I love that. The little antenna sticking out of the eye.
Yeah,
whipping around.
No. I think, too, what you've got to remember, too, is each thing that you do with your character, when you're creating their backstory, you know, besides just the have a reason for it, have a reason for each piece of this character that you put into your story, is you also want to build a connection between your character and your reader. That's where your reader is going to feel like they're living through that character. They're seeing the story, seeing the events, seeing, you know, experiencing the things that are happening to that character as if they were the character. And I mean, that emotional connection that you get with a character, you know, between a reader and a character, that's what you really want to use. Emotion can really be your driving force.
And it's interesting because with Aristide right now, I'm going back and rewriting a little bit of some of the scenes. And one of the characters I felt kind of fell flat in some of the first versions of it. I'm bringing in more story to her and more, she's a little bit more of a commander of what's going on than what was originally written. She was a very neat character in the beginning that didn't build till the middle of the book.
Which one?
Stella.
Oh, okay, Della, okay.
Mayor's wife.
No, that's kind of what I was thinking.
And essentially, she was just kind of a soundboard for the mayor and didn't really come into the novel until about halfway through when she got really angry right. about something that happened.
Right.
And I found that was a weakness with it. So now I'm going back and making her a little bit more strong character at the beginning and a lot more bullheaded. And
it'll make a lot more sense then whenever she does stand up for Lawfen later on.
And I think it makes it, it's going to be a lot more stronger character, a lot more sense to what's going on. Mm-hmm. There was a character description I wanted to read from Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy by Douglas Adams. He was not conspicuously tall. His features were striking, but not conspicuously handsome. His hair was wiry, gingerish, and brushed backward from his temples. His skin seemed to be pulled backward from the nose. There was something very slightly odd about him, but it was difficult to say what it was. Perhaps that his eyes didn't seem to blink often enough, and when you talked to him for any length of time, your eyes began to involuntarily to water on his behalf. Perhaps it was that he smiled too broadly and gave people an unnerving impression that he was about to go for their neck. And that was the character of Ford Prefect. So... And, you know, it's a little bit of a physical description, but yet we have something that is unnerving
but for other there was a sleep. Reason for it, though, too.
Right.
There's a reason for the physical description in there.
Because we later find out he's not in this movie.
Yeah, there you go.
Sorry, spoiler. The movie's been out for over a decade. Deal with it.
One of the things, too, that I kind of wanted to go back into is just when you take the time to really get to know your characters... And I know this is going to drive people who are staunch outliners, it's going to drive them crazy for me to say this. But sometimes you need to allow your characters to speak to you. Sometimes you need to allow your characters, once you get them to where they are so fleshed out, where you know that character really, really well, you know, once you get to that point... Sometimes you need to allow that character to drive the story.
Well, and I think also you start talking about kind of the old reference of plot versus, or I'm sorry, literature versus genre. Mm-hmm. To where literature was more based on character, to where genre was more based on plot, setting, and things as such.
Right.
You know, and sometimes, you know, you read a lot of older literature and it's there's too much development.
It's completely different than what's expected now.
Yeah.
And just because, you know, we have genre fiction, you know, because tropes and everything have changed so much over the years, expectations, you know, even genres have changed over the years. We've added new genres.
We need an explosion about every 35 minutes to keep us going.
Well, if it's a thriller, absolutely, absolutely. You gotta have some car chases, some explosions, and stuff like that, but we're getting off topic there.
There is one thing I want to bring up. I just finished reading Chase Magnus, which is Rick Warden's new Norse mythology book. It was book one.
Okay.
And it was interesting. The characters were really good. Uh-huh. And, you know, normally I didn't like his Percy Jackson because I felt the characters were almost too kiddish.
Kiddish.
Mm-hmm. Too goofy. Mm-hmm. And there's that subtle goofiness in this, too, but also...
Well, but that's probably a different target market, though, as well.
Possibly. And I was very interested to see how he wove myths into these stories and some of the myths he chose. I'm very versed in Norse mythology, and I was very impressed by the book from what he chose.
Huh.
But the interesting thing was you had the characters in the book, and the gods were caricatures.
The gods were caricatures? Yes,
they were overblown versions of themselves. And it also kind of takes me back to the movie Eric the Viking.
Oh.
And it was done by Tim Robbins, I think, 80s. And it's about the life of this Viking and how hard it is and that the gods are bringing on the end of the world. And it's so funny because at the end of the movie, they go to Asgard to meet the gods, and the gods are children. And then suddenly, all the things that were going on make sense because essentially it was these little children bickering and doing their things that were causing the problems.
Oh my goodness! Oh, that's the way sometimes it feels, huh?
But, yeah, I was kind of amazed at how... But, you know, that's his style of writing. He's writing for a YA audience.
Okay,
you
know, yeah.
Audience.
Yeah.
So the goofiness...
See, I'm not a YA person.
I'm actually reading a lot more just because of
What you teach. Yeah. You need to know what's out there in the literary world.
It gives me some really good fodder for discussions and also the fact that I can kind of turn the kids on to some mythologies.
Mm-hmm. You know, the last thing I'd like to kind of point out is, too, if you go through the process of really making your characters feel fleshed out, feel like three-dimensional, real-life, flesh-and-blood human beings, you need to make sure that you give them a chance and room in your story to change and to grow.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's plot. I mean, you have to have change in a character. What's the point?
Well, if you stop and you think about humanity... You know, if you stop and think about yourself.
Hold on, there's one I gotta bring up here. Star Wars. Luke Skywalker's character.
Uh-huh.
Luke is a whiny brat.
Uh-huh.
And he becomes a whiny Jedi who ends up whining and destroying the Death Star. And, we see growth in this character.
Right.
And I've always told my students, the one thing to think about, this is actually kind of going back to plot, but in Star Wars, there's no resolution. You have the destruction of the Death Star, the medal ceremony, boom, done, credits. There's no resolution. You don't see how the world has changed in what they did. And I always told the kids, think of it like this. What would have happened if Luke's character, after all this happens, he found out he loved the farm?
He went back to
it. And the very end of Star Wars was him climbing that hill, watching the twin Tatooine sons, and behind him is the farm that he was raised at,
oh my!
It would completely change the story.
And totally.
That's fairly character driven because that was Luke's decision. It wasn't the grand epic fantasy of this worldwide galactic conflict. Mm-hmm. It is Luke and himself going, well, I did this great thing, now I'm done.
Well, in a sense.
In Rogue One, we see that because we have this. Sorry, okay, I'm going to spoil it.
I haven't seen it yet. Tyler saw it, but I haven't seen it yet.
I'll just say the engineer.
Okay.
I'll leave it at that.
All right, leave it at that.
Yeah.
But you're talking about that whole thing, too, and that's essentially what happens, like, in Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
You know, you have these hobbits go on this massive, you know, adventure to them at first, and then they realize the magnitude of what they're involved in and the trauma that it does to them, but how it binds them all together. And then, at the very end, they go back to the Shire. They go back... to their old lives.
And who's comfortable and who's not.
Yeah, exactly. But then it shows, you know, them getting, you know, like Sam, you know, okay, he's able to go back and he's, you know, Samwise is very resilient in that show. I see such a resilience in his character because he's able to go back, let go of everything that's happened.
And be comfortable.
And be comfortable in his skin once again and truly live his life. Whereas Frodo was never able to get past the trauma, the depth of the trauma that he experienced.
And it's interesting when we talk about the hero's journey, and I think we'll do probably an episode on that by itself when we get into plot. But on the hero's journey, it's a circular plotting system. You have the plot roller coaster and it never comes back around, but in the hero's journey, you have this gigantic circular journey that starts in one place and it ends in the same place. Mm-hmm. And part of the character's growth is the question of, are they comfortable? Because they've been through this, and a lot of times the answer to that is no.
And can they go on?
Can they go on? Because you look at Bilbo's character, and it's completely different. He went home and he was happy.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Although he's now an immortal under the power of the ring. But the fact is, he's lived his life.
Right.
To where Frodo, he knows that there's more out there, and he can't handle sitting in a bar at 5 o'clock every night with Norm and Cliff.
Mm-hmm.
And drinking away his sorrows while Sam's romancing the bartender.
The barmaid.
I'm sorry, barmaid, barwench. He's ready to go float off into the elven lands, which, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
There's papers written on that I'm going to right now.
Okay.
Some people thought it was just a suicidal trip that the elves just went off. And,
oh, okay.
A little dark, but...
Yeah, we're not going to go there. Anyway, bringing it back here to characters, I think we're going to go ahead and wrap it up. Just remember to really spend some time fleshing out your characters. And I mean, you can go ahead and write your first draft, kind of like what I do. You can write your first draft and get the bare bones of something down, but before you really dig in and
take some time and write a couple pages just on your characters. And it doesn't have to be
a dossier.
It doesn't have to be anything you're going to put in the book.
Yeah.
Just write some stories down of what happened.
Well, and sometimes there are connections to some of the other characters, and maybe there's a connection there that your character doesn't even know about, but you as the author are going to bring that out into the realm of your story.
Yeah.
You know, write down the details about your character. Write down their backstories. Write down what things they like, their quirks, the things that make them tick.
And there's a great program out there called Scrivener that you can make these dossier files and keep them all in one place.
I just make a Word file.
Yeah. And, I mean, it'll even allow you to download pictures and put pictures up of who your
Word
character may
look
like.
Word lets you do that, too.
Yeah, true. Sorry, I guess it's not that special. I guess we're not going to get any money from that.
I guess I'm too much like Bailey. I like my car. I like my phone.
Right. I like the coffee straight black.
I like my chair. I like my spot. Well, this is Coffee and Catastrophe, Writers on a Caffeine High. I am D.A. Bale.
And I am William Brian Johnson. If you have questions, comments, concerns, hate mail, send it to us at catastrophiccoffee@gmail.com.
And we'll see you next time.
Take care.